It's been suggested plenty of times that the modern world is actually getting closer over time to the world of the Gospels, closer to the world in which Jesus lived and taught. To be honest, I think it's actually a crummy argument most of the time. But today, at least for today's reading, I think there are enough parallels in the context to make it work. In the world that Jesus knew, the majority of people lived in poverty, and there was very little they could do to get out of it. Food and shelter were far from a sure thing most of the time. In the world that Jesus knew, there was a big divide between the haves and the have-nots. The former owned slaves and held lavish banquets. The latter lived in overcrowded cities full of disease and violence. In the world that Jesus knew, the government ruled only through oppression and violence, and the powerful were the only ones who had any say. And in the world that Jesus knew, people were crying out for change, but found it really hard to hope for a future that seemed so far away. It is into that context that Jesus preaches his Sermon on the Mount. It's impossible not to see the connection to Moses, the last great prophet who went up a mountain to receive the law and then came down to share it with the people. Before going any further, I need to offer a few ways that we should not read this passage. First, these were not just descriptions of everyday life. As one author puts it, Jesus was not simply giving them timeless truths about the way the world works or about human behavior. Because as we know, those who mourn for themselves or the suffering of others quite often go without any comfort. And those seeking righteousness far too often never live long enough to see it. So this is not intended to be a description of what is happening around him. Second, although there was a time in the church's history when this idea was pretty popular, they are not prescriptive. This is not a set of instructions for a happy life or a perfectly spiritual one. It's not a new list of commandments, although we can find some ethical instruction if we look. Take the poor in spirit, for example, a turn of phrase which probably just meant poor people. And not just any poor people, though. The word used here appears elsewhere to describe the abject destitution of a beggar. Jesus is most assuredly not suggesting that everyone go out and live like that on his account, because that kind of poverty is not holy. It's dehumanizing. So then how in the world can the poor and the persecuted and all the others beaten down by society ever be called blessed? Well, they can't. Not in the world they knew. Not in the world that we know either. But Jesus is asking the disciples and us to imagine the world being totally different. Imagine a world in which the oppressed are the ones worthy of honor. A world in which evil will be undone. A world in which God's blessing is freely given to those whom the world will not bless. It is not just a fairy tale or a feel-good prediction. Last week, we heard Jesus say that the kingdom of heaven had come near, and this week, we are given a picture of what that looks like. And perhaps even more so, and especially in this Epiphany season, we hear who it is that has brought it into being. The same one who came to give good news to the poor, release to the captives, healing for the blind, freedom for the oppressed, and a proclamation of God's favor. It sounds like a complete upheaval to me. But at the same time, it's also a return to the way things were always meant to be. A return to the perfection of the very beginning. Right now, in this in-between time, both of those worlds exist side by side. And we get to decide which one we want to live in. In one of them, we have to earn God's blessing. In that world, there's no way we could ever have enough, be good enough, or even be enough to ever deserve it. We will benefit only when we hoard our resources and do whatever it takes to get ahead. We will never be truly happy or fulfilled. Nor will all those pushed down by society ever even have a chance. In the other world, in that world, God's blessing, God's favor, is a freely given gift available to the weak and the oppressed, both now and in the age to come. In that world, our happiness comes from knowing that truth and knowing the one who offers it. And more than offers it, because God declares it. God makes it true. The same God who, to borrow that great Jesuit phrase, displays a preferential option for the poor and the powerless. We know which world Jesus chose. Let's go with that one.